Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Tired of the noise and spin? Join the Middle Ground Mike Patreon for 7 days for free. And then it's just $1 a month afterwards. Real talk, real people right now. Sign up today, middlegroundmike.com. Click on the button. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Middle Ground Mike. I've got a really great guest here and even better guy, Dr. Glenn Tobey. Hey, Dr. Glenn, tell everybody about yourself.
Good to be here. Born in Brooklyn, raised in Queens. I experienced youth homelessness as a kid at the age of 8. Bounced around a little bit, always a household. My brother, Randall, my mother, and my grandmother bounced around a little bit with the support of government and family and friends. And at about the seventh grade, I went to this place called Queens Village Hollis, where the birth, part of the birth or the rebirth of hip hop with the Run DMC, Russell Simmons, and others. And I was a rapper, one of the pioneers called Mr. Sweetie G. After that period of time, back then from the music side, went into business, bounced around a little bit. From there, had the honor of being on LL Cool J's management team with Brian Latour and Charles Fisher at that point here. And I had the honor of discovering rappers such as Positive K to David Banner, Saigon, and left that, went to the sports space, which we know how much you love as a sports agent, having an agency representing some of the best players from Asante Samuel. We did a $60 million deal. Damian Robinson, my first client, Antonio Freeman, all the way over to, God bless, Josh Evans, world champion boxers. We did over $300 million in business, sold that company. I'm currently back in the winner's circle with Rakim Vick and Brady Jackson. And we're doing something called the winner's circle NIL representing athletes. And I'm at RCP Capital doing venture capital work. And that's what I'm doing now as an entrepreneur, as someone that loves sports, that loves culture. So we're back at it again.
Yeah, that's a lengthy background. So, you know, like we had kind of talked a little bit about sports for some of like the leadership aspects in today's world, right? You know, the current climate we're in just in general, you know, what is your experience with that? Maybe for some of like the up and comers in life, right? Like, hey, you know, I'm pursuing ABC, or whether it's sports, you know, obviously you have a lot of experience in contract negotiations. And I think that's something that they don't really teach young people.
I think, you know, the nuclear family in our country has changed even on a global level. Macroeconomics versus microeconomics are where it is. People are concerned about the president that's in the White House. They're concerned about other communities and even their own, instead of governing from inside the house. We have to be the president of our house. Forget the White House. Make sure your house is the right house. And when you do that, you govern with legislation, meaning your wife or your partner or your family or yourself, talking to anybody from the proper attorney or whoever helps you file your taxes or your money advisor, that we have to govern from within. You know, I constantly say, you talk about community. Common community means common unity, but it is uncommon unity that moves the world.
Yes.
And if we're communal, meaning like from the traditional values of husband, wife, mother, father, even those that don't live together but still have family, I think that's what moves not just the money. It moves men, women, and mountains, you know, love, understanding, grace, and mastering the destiny and being responsible for what our calling is to life. That's what real money is.
And I think definitely when everybody's involved in the family, well, it's a whole lot easier to master that, you know, whether, like you said, people living together or not. You know, everybody being there going, I think when there's two parties involved in that aspect, the best they can, right? I feel like the parents are a little bit more willing to go, hey, you're straying from where you need to be. Whereas when it's one parent, because I grew up for a while in a single dad household.
Yeah.
I will tell you, compared to my friends who had single mothers, it was definitely
different.
Your feelings don't matter. Yeah, we're here to get this done, you know, and
wow.
You know, obviously that wasn't like a long-term thing, but you know, it was definitely different, you know, and I had seen my friend go through it, but you know, just having those parents there to sit there and tell you, hey, what you're doing isn't right.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't going to put you right. And I think sometimes when you're by yourself, you know, I know my dad seemed a little bit more, hey, let's make sure everything's okay. My dad's version was, don't bother me. Don't cause me have to leave work. Don't, as long as you do that, everything's fine.
Get through it.
You know, whereas when you have that, you know, double parent household, you know, while one person's pushing that, the other person takes on the different aspects, you know, of child. I'm married, two kids, you know, one 15, one six going on seven. He's autistic.
Bless him. Yeah.
But you know what, though? I mean, everything they said that kid couldn't do, he's defying the odds. He's riding a bike, said he would never go to the bathroom on his own. He's doing all, I mean, he's just, they said he would never speak on his own, like complete sentences. Just 2 weeks ago, started forming perfect sentences like he had doing it his whole life.
And still growing. You're right, yeah. Because I grew up in a single parent house, but I had my grandmother, so it was two. But we had love, discipline, respect, care, lots of education. And there is a difference when you have two parents, but they got to be the right parents too. So if you have two parents who don't get along and it's like a war zone and it's a disconnect and the parents are not showing love, how it's given, how it's received, it doesn't make a difference. Even me, my mother had a bout of mental illness, but the love was there. The connectivity was there. The grace was there. So I missed nothing. Whatever I missed out of that household, I found it was my responsibility to get it to be the, because they told me, here's where you are. Here's the greatness in you. These are the greater parts of life, education, culture, religion, understanding. There were no limits in my life. Whatever the limits were, they gave me enough power, information, and preparation to know that I had limitless potential with limitless value, and I worked without limit. And that's how I got to it. So we have to parent ourselves. Our parents raise us up, but society rises us up, and we're responsible for every step and every breath we take.
Yeah. And I definitely think in schools, they don't push that enough, or in a lot of, it doesn't seem like a lot of homes these days. I can't say all homes because I know a lot that do, but you know, I feel like they're putting a lot of these young kids at a disadvantage. You know, so I was telling my son, I said, you know, by the time I was 15, I'd already lived through two recessions, getting ready to head into my third one. Yeah, I said, and by the time I was 25, I had lived through three recessions and a great recession. And I said, you know, I said, you're 15. The only thing you've really lived through is prosperity. I said, you know, and I told him, I said, what goes up must come down at some point. And that's where the real lessons get taught. I said, you know, I was like, when I was coming up, you know, Detroit was on a downturn. So you were kind of lucky to, not even just Detroit, Metro Detroit, you're lucky to get a job at the gas station part time.
Wow.
You know, McDonald's would have hiring days and there'd be people lined up, you know. So I told him, I said, you just see a world where I don't like it. I quit. I go here. I said, and while that is always you want to be the case in most situations, people take a little bit too much liberty sometimes with that. And then they put themselves in bad spots, you know. So I see that, you know, and I really want the best for kids just in general, because, you know, they're our future, you know, kids in general. You know, when I'm an old man sitting in a home screaming at the TV about, you know, lions or whatever, you know, those kids are going to be the ones that are taking care of me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I want them to be able to take care of themselves, you know, and like part of like one of your things is, you know, underserved communities, you know, like I grew up in, lived, I was like 11, 12, give or take, in a community in Detroit called Warrendale. It wasn't the poorest part of Detroit at the time, but it definitely, it's kind of there now. But,
no cakewalk, right?
Yeah. You know, I definitely got to see a lot of that before, you know, we moved out to the suburbs, you know, and it was definitely, you know, a challenge, you know, and like you were saying, I had seen a lot of homelessness among kids, adults, you know, in Detroit, I noticed that there was a lot of homeless people, definitely with mental health problems that, you know, they shouldn't be out there, you know, on their own. And it made me think about that as you were talking about your own situation.
Yeah. I think without having the rudimentary basics, nothing can come. It's a good foundation. It's patience, understanding. But I think even when you get to a certain age, no matter who you are, we're all responsible for our lives. We write the book of our lives. We have the power to make the changes. And prayerfully, people can remove them. If they can't be removed from, you know, some of the bad spaces that they're in, they'll have the wisdom and the tools and resources or the will to want to make the change. And it's not a systemic loss, you know, to break these chains of inequity. And because, you know, at our foundation, the Bookbank Foundation, I've been doing it for close to 30 years. We serve the lost, the lonely, and the forgotten. And we believe that ignorance is the first step to incarceration, mental illness, drug abuse, and economic disparity, hate, all these things. And with grace and love and wisdom, people realize the world is bigger than the world they see. And they start to look at the world, not just out of their eyes, but through a prism. And hopefully how they walk and live their life, it provides the same perspective for someone to see them in.
Yeah. And, you know, one person who kind of really, I guess he's a little bit more of a modern act. I guess you call him a political rapper per se. I'm sure you've heard of Tom McDonald.
Of course.
Captain of controversy, you know.
Yeah.
But from where he came, before he got that first hit, He was living in a house that was infested with roaches. He said, you know, you'd be able to see them crawling through the cabinets in Compton.
Vision.
Yeah, he bet on himself. He bet that, hey, you know what? A lot of people think just like me. And he goes, I can't be the only one that thinks this way. And I sat there and I said, you know what? I definitely lean on one side, but I have a lot of friends who are on the other side as well. A lot of friends who would give me the shirt off their back and vice versa in a moment's notice. And I said, how come there's not more of that? You know, and it doesn't matter the subject when it comes to parenting, when it comes to entertainment, a business, you know, there's got to be collaboration produces results.
Sure does, brother. Yeah, it teaches teamwork, patience, respect. You know, there's a lot to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, and that's just, you know, one of the things that can you like just kind of give us like a moment in your life that kind of really you're like, hey, man, this is it. This is like this, you know, obviously, you know, there might be a couple, right? But the one where it just pops in your head that says, this is the moment that gave me the direction in life that I wanted to go.
Yeah, I think that moment was as, you know, we grew up in, I'd say, a spiritual family. Obviously, religion was there. But my grandmother was really big on discussing the tenets of righteousness and obeying commandments and being respectful and humble and kind, but yet strong and proud of who you are. And as I continued to grow, my benchmark or the litmus test would be how pleased she was and how she moved to how I navigated through the world, making mistakes, bad choices, good choices. And she was a hero to me because she led the household much of the time when my mother was compromised with mental health. So I think me just watching, going from middle school, getting that home, a steady environment, thriving through middle school to high school, having celebrity and becoming an icon, a pioneer in hip hop, learning economics and understanding community and culture. I was able to put it together because of not just critical thinking and not just a sense of awareness, but also looking at where I didn't want to be and where I had to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not an easy thing for a lot of people to do. You know, that shows a lot of, you know, tenacity, fortitude, guts, instinct. And sometimes I don't think that instinct is always something that is, I want to say like not taught, right? But sometimes it is, right? You learn certain foundations and you develop an instinct based on those foundations. You learn what to do and not to do. And definitely, I grew up in a spiritual home too, Catholic. You know, family was very, very devout Catholics. I mean, you know, grandma went 3 times a week. So I went 3 times a week.
Right.
You know, for a lot of my life. And, you know, I was just like, by the time I was a teenager, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like, this is a lot, you know, I mean, but yeah, I'm still religious, you know, kind of different church now, but my wife is, she's a Pentecostal.
Wow.
So, you know, definitely a little bit more traditional than the Catholicism.
Deep.
Yeah. You know, and she's a good woman. I think that's something I definitely learned from my dad, and, you know, him and my mother weren't together. My mother, you know, just having that one good person in your life, man, that, you know, like going back from like that moment, even my wife, you know, because I was kind of a guy where I was just kind of content with where I was. I'm just kind of just moving along.
Pushing through life.
Yeah, experiencing different things. And, you know, you just hit that. And then she was just kind of like, I know you want more. Why don't you just go get it? And I was like, okay, not a bad idea. Let's do it. You know, she's that silent person. She's easygoing, but she just knows what to say and when to say it. And, you know, I've done a couple of podcasts on, I don't know if some people call them men's rights. I call it more just like a men's movement, right? And not minimizing women at all in any, you know, with like your leadership and things like that. These days, you know, a lot of young men have to wear a lot of hats that we didn't have to. And that's yeah, challenging. You know, they have to be that man that can connect with his spouse on a whole different level than his parents did. But at the same time, is still expected to be that provider. And if he's not, he's not considered part of the family.
Yeah, it's a big deal now. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of people having the proper tools and the material meaning their life experiences, mental health care is so important. It is imperative that people match up with somebody, whether it's a rabbi, an imam, a priest, a therapist, family member, a friend, or a group. In order to all of you watching and listening to us today, it's so important that you have a choice and you have a chance to iterate, make changes, and appreciate the opportunities that are there for you. So you know, even if you can't get to it, people are hampered by choices made by their parents or even their own choices. We have to be patient to address it honestly, and we can change it. We can do more good than bad.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not gonna lie, folks like you, they make it for people want to when they see someone who went through that to get to where they are now. I think that is so important, especially considering today, I don't know, 1850s, I believe it was like 60 or 70% of wealth was created from the bottom up, people, you know, coming from the ground up. I think it's only about 50-50 now, where a lot of people now are kind of getting carried over, you know, that generational wealth. And so, and what I think is lost in that is there's a lot less examples of people who said, you know what, I didn't know nothing, and now I'm here. Case in point, one of the robber barons, J.D. Rockefeller, couldn't read or write.
Right. Inspiration, passion.
Yeah. And, you know, he created Standard Oil. I mean, it's like what we call Exxon today. You know, if it wasn't for him, who knows when gasoline would have came around. And his was just more, what do I do with this byproduct? I have no idea what to do with it. And he didn't know. He had no scientific background per se that much, but he knew and was smart enough to say, but I'm going to find some people who do know more than me. And I'm going to put this in their hands. You know, I think J.D. Rockefeller, I mean, Thomas Edison's another good example. Henry Ford, a lot of those guys. Tom McDonald, like I was saying, you know, one of his, I don't want to say good friends, but one of his cohorts, if you want to call it, Adam Calhoun, grew up in the streets of Chicago. You know, those guys really just, you know, to me, those guys are examples. Things like that are examples that people need to be shown rather than the guy who, and I'm not knocking anybody who has wealth given to them. You know, hey,
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah, yeah. God bless them. But yeah, right. The old school way, the old fashioned way.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose of our country these days, you know, is you can come from the bottom and go up. And I feel like it only seems like it's such a larger scale now because it's just seen that way, because all people see are the super successful on TV. They don't see that one guy who went from nothing that, okay, maybe he's only worth $5 million now, but the $5 million guy isn't getting the same TV time as Elon Musk.
Right, right.
And I feel like that's where, you know, folks like you come in and, you know, your story just makes like a huge difference, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna lie, I did not know you were an artist back in the day. I had no idea. You know, I had read a lot about it, but that is not one part that I seen. So that is just, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I mean, that takes talent and effort and work.
Yeah, work. I've used it as a way. It's ended up being ministry. Like God had a calling on my life to speak and to say words. It started off with entertainment, then expression and entertainment. Then it was a calling, clarion call to community to do great things like we're doing here at the Bookmake Foundation. And it's a gift. And I think I discovered the gift and nurtured it. And it's a part of me breathing, you know, the arts as well as making money and representing people. It's just oneness for me. Is one is my consciousness.
Yeah. And that's, you know, like I was telling you before, I mean, that's how I view leadership is something that I want to try to, you know, bring out to people and go, hey, there's more than, you know, obviously certain things got to be cutthroat in business. It just has to be. That's just the way it is. That's the way you got to make money. But I feel like you can achieve that long term with good leadership. And I feel like that's what you've done, you know, like, and leadership's what it's all like, leadership in your home, leadership of yourself. Leadership of everything around you, you know, and a lot of people go, that's an alpha male mentality. I mean, I guess you could consider it that, but I also consider it good business for yourself.
I agree. I mean, when I negotiate, whether it's a $60 million deal or a $5 million record deal, you can't go in and destroy relationships and be disrespectful and not give equitable value. You can out negotiate somebody to get what you want, but you need to always return the value.
Yes.
Or you're a pirate, basically. So the art, the natural art, is making a promise, over-delivering, and being steadfast and determined to meeting your goals and staying honest with ethics, because there aren't many people today who are practicing that, and it's essential.
Yeah, yeah. No, it definitely is. You know, especially when you're negotiating deals, you know, I kind of attribute that to a lot of certain things that I've done too, you know. And, you know, like, you've got to just treat people with respect. You know, like you were saying, you got to bring that value to the table. And it's about, you know, whether somebody's going to an employer, they're starting their own business, you know, whatever. It's heck, even trying to apply for college, right? Like, if you're trying to apply to a Harvard, what are you bringing to the table? You have to show them you're bringing something to the table, because if not, you're no different than every other kid who had the dream of going to Harvard.
Yeah, with the interview process, again, it's so difficult to get in there. And traditional education is changing so much. You know, there are different types and modalities of learning, whether it's YouTube University, whether it's learning online. But the apprenticeship program was always great for years, but there are less apprenticeships. But I think mentoring and, you know, collective opportunities, meaning there's a chance for one person to win, but they have enough space to invite someone in so they can have more freedom, yes, more money, or more of an opportunity. And I think that's what's going to save America. And that's what's going to send the world.
Yeah, it's like one of my idols, if you want to call it, would say Ronald Reagan, our best days are ahead of us. America has not yet seen its best days.
You know, it's God's way, God's will. We just have to keep working and be tolerant and patient and back to the basics here in this country. That's what I think it is. I think it's tolerance, grace, understanding, and hard work.
Yeah. You know, the Book Bank Foundation, that's something that is, expand on that a little bit for people that are, out there just curious.
Yeah. The Book Bank is a 501c, a not-for-profit charity. It's been around for almost 30 years. We have several programs. It's education-based. We believe that poverty and ignorance, again, is the first step to incarceration, mental illness, drug abuse, and economic disparity. And some of the programs that we have are one block at a time, where we go into urban cities and we clean up the city. All the trash on the streets, men and women all come to just come and clean the city up and teach others and remind others to be responsible. We have Groceries to Grow, which is a regular program that we put families in. We fed thousands on that. We've been doing that for over 3 years now. And what we do is we provide healthy meals for families, whether it is farm food, meaning vegetables and fruit, or if it is just healthy options like cereal and just stuff you want to curate on your own, right? And one of the other programs, we have a flight school that's coming up in the end of July with Captain John Addison, where we're going to be teaching kids how to fly.
Oh, that's awesome.
10 to 15 kids going up in the air. And we're proud to be doing that for the fifth year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we definitely need that because, they're talking about going to Mars. So we definitely need more pilots out there. It's a great thing because you never know, man. That could be one of those kids that's the one that figures out how to get there in under five, in under 9 months, So that's the things like that are what's going to make a difference. If you guys ever need some children's books, I'm going to have a whole lineup coming out at the end of the
day. And I have a children's book, which is Little G Faces the Brooklyn Bully.
Nice.
Funny enough, so this was the first one. It was my story of growing up in Brooklyn. There was no real bully. Nice. The bully was actually the community in the tough times. Then from there, we did the second edition, which I did with my dear friend, Mr. Brian Gosher, which is Little G and the Dirty-Faced Angels, about a bunch of young kids who learned spirituality and positivity.
That's awesome.
Interesting story. And then lastly, ladies and gentlemen, check out The Asian Power League, a novel that is about Michael Ha Young, who's a business mogul. Here's where it is. He's doing great things in business, and he is challenged whether he should, be a business person and move against the ethics and the principles of the United States and make billions of dollars by working with the Asian country. We don't say which one it is. It's all fiction. Or does he fight for America and do what's right? So it's a kind of a funny story. You can get it on Amazon.
Yeah, hey, that's always a challenge when it comes to fighting for being a patriot is sometimes not cheap nor easy.
At all.
That's always just, that's rough. And that's great that the things you're doing with the Book Bank Foundation. I mean, that's just,
thank you.
I mean, communities need more and more and more like that. Here in Detroit, I know Kid Rock's done a lot of things like that. Eminem has.
Yep. They step up.
Yeah. I mean, no diss on
Eminem. Jalen, your boy.
Yes. Yes. No diss on Eminem. School. I'm sure you've heard of Mom's Spaghetti.
Yeah, man.
It's big, but it's not your mom's spaghetti. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
He's done a lot, a lot of names. I mean, God, I don't know. I'm drawing a blank. Bob Seger did a lot here. So did Alice Cooper. Funny quick story about that is my aunt, my dad, and my other aunt all grew up with Bob Seger.
Wow.
And Ted Nugent. And I should have brought him, but they have pictures of when they were all teenagers just, hanging out in Detroit. And that's back when Detroit was just, it still is a music city, right? But that's back when Detroit was really all music.
Bay City Roller days, huh? You don't know about that.
I've heard it, but I don't know it. But I've heard it. I've heard my dad say things about that. My dad used to tell me it's just, back then outside of, the auto plants, it was auto plants or music. That was Detroit.
What a history. Yes, absolutely, man.
Yeah,
in so many ways. And then not just Detroit, but even the surrounding cities in Michigan have provided a lot, from education to medicine, academics, entrepreneurs,
Yeah.
Amazing state, amazing people.
Steve Ballmer, CEO. Well, I don't think he's the CEO of Microsoft anymore. I think he stepped down.
One of the founders.
Yeah, he was from technically from suburbs of Detroit, like Farmington Hills, I believe, or Novi, one of the two cities, technically where he was from. You know, but I mean, gosh, I mean, look, while he didn't come from Detroit, Barry Sanders, to me, is his personality is emblematic of the city. Just cool, calm, collected, go to work, do your job.
Straight to business. Straight to business.
Gosh, you know, I had the privilege of meeting him back in 19, and they had like a little dinner thing, and great guy. I mean, just great human. I mean,
took the time with you, yeah?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, I didn't expect it. I got an email one day that said, hey, you know, this is, you won this, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, any football fan, not just a Lions fan, says no to dinner with Barry Sanders.
Yeah, and I worked. I think we did some shows with him, some fundraisers with some of the players that we've represented. And rock solid guy, left on top, ethics, principles,
yeah,
his life.
Same
with
Calvin Johnson.
Living your own life. Yep.
Now, being in Georgia, have you had any dealings down there with him?
He actually owns a penthouse in a building that I had an investment in.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think he has some dispensary stuff going on up there as well.
Oh, yeah. He still very him and, gosh, I forget the...
Family man.
There's an offensive lineman that when they pretty much both left, they went in the business together. I can't think of his name, just drawing a blank off the top of my head. But yeah, they started dispensaries up here and... You know,
he's done well. He's done well with it. Real guy. Yeah. Family man, too.
Yeah. And this community up here, you know, even when he left, some folks were a little salty, but, you know, you got to understand his perspective when you can't pick your feet up off the floor no more and your team does nothing but lose. I mean, it's kind of hard to get him to go to work every day.
Especially when you've made over $20 million.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he gave the city everything he had. And, you know, he still comes up here and he's at a, if not every game, almost every game. You know, the Fords, Sheila Ford, mended her relationship with him, and she actually flew down to his home in Georgia, went to his doorstep and knocked on his door to get that process rolling. This billionaire lady recognized the value, like we were talking about, the value he brought to her business and said, this went wrong. I'm going to fix it myself. She didn't send an envoy. No, she went to his home.
And got it done.
Yeah, part of what he said is that really, you know, that really impressed him.
Resonated with him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, well, she's worth billions. I mean, she could have easily went on like her parents did, and, you know, no shade towards the parents. I mean, Martha Ford's still alive, but William Clay Ford was just more concerned with selling the tickets. He did not. Do I think he wanted to lose? No. But getting that Super Bowl title was not as much of a priority as it is for his daughter.
That's beautiful, yeah. That's what it's about. Family.
And you can just tell in the results, you know. I mean, but from what I've understood is, William, your background in sports, is it really common for the owners to meddle?
So I've found you've got three. There's some people that run it as a sports business. It's an ecosystem, total vertical integration. They're counting everything from off-field activities, how it affects the community. They have a community outreach, or they're able to maximize the brand value of the team. Then you have some people who love the sports. They're enthusiasts. They're committed to the game. They love playing the game inside the white lines and outside because most of the game's played off the field or the court. And then you have the last ones who are loyalists, who are like doing anything to win, like the George Steinbrenners of the world. There aren't a lot of guys like that. Even Jerry, as he built the empire with the Dallas, there were times that he would lay back a little bit and not try to react on every issue, every matter. But I tell you, it's worth it doing the dedicated to the fans, dedicated to the business with an understanding of measuring the politics. Your franchise is going to be worth more money. You have more growth and you're able to control more. From trends to fans to the experience, which is priceless, especially as it starts to grow. And because it's a global sport now, so I think a lot of people are looking at the brand recognition and the style of going to market and staying at market, like what the staying power is. And if you do it equitably, you're going to have a franchise that's worth billions.
Yeah, you know, you probably heard of him, Mike Ilitch.
Oh, of course.
You know,
he's done a lot for that town.
And you know, some that he did that I didn't know about, I think they said not even the media here knew about until after he passed away. When he passed away, Rosa Parks, she had pretty much no money.
The house.
He took care of and all her bills, her home, everything for the rest of her life, he took care of, and he made sure that it stayed under wraps. He wanted no publicity. He recognized what she had done and said, this is where I'm somebody in position. And he stepped in and he did the right thing without the recognition.
Honored her. Yeah, I heard that story. And this is where she was robbed, or somebody robbed her house, or snatched a hand. What happened? Something happened to
I
her?
believe some essentially her the money that she did have was taken, I believe. I don't know if it was, I think it was through family,
Scam?
family, yes, scam family, something of that nature. I forget the exact part. The most of the news story just kind of focused on what Mike had done for her. And, you know, it was kind of talking about the sports thing, as you know, well, now her son owns it, but the Detroit Tigers and Detroit Red Wings. You know, man, not a knock on Chris Ilitch, man, but his dad definitely knew that he had to spend a lot of money to make a lot of money. Where Chris Ilitch is, he is ironclad with them purse strings, man. He does not want to spend a nickel more than he has to.
I get it, but you know, look at your city. Your city's a tough city. Sports loyalists, who, you know, a lot of people don't know. A lot of Detroit fans are still fans of other sports and other players, but Detroit, Philadelphia, New York, and Los Angeles, New Orleans. I mean, these are
Chicago.
Teams. Chicago, DC, Boston. So, yeah, that's the price of being number one sometimes. It's a lot of losses until you get to the win.
Yeah, you know, Mike Ilitch, God bless his soul, you know, that man spent a lot of money trying to win a World Series and was never quite able to do it. You know, it was definitely a shame that they couldn't make it happen. You know, and it was a sad day in this town when he passed. You know, a lot of people were
revered.
I mean, you know, he was a great person. I mean, he just did a lot. I mean, there was no end to what he would do for the city, even when Detroit was at its worst. Downtrodden, he never once moved his headquarters out of the city. He never once packed it up and ran. When a lot of businesses did, he said, nope, this is my town. And he was smart, though. You know, and I've told everybody, you know, they're like, oh, Detroit's gonna go bankrupt. I'm like, and that's the time to buy if you've got that kind of cash flow. All
and,
those assets are going to be completely depressed. And Mike Ilitch went in, him and his family, they bought a bunch of vacant properties. And then when they wanted to build a new arena, got top dollar selling them back.
Yeah.
You know, and Dan Gilbert, I'm sure you know who Dan Gilbert is.
What he did in Cleveland, amazing. Rebuilt the city, sort of, in both cities.
Yeah, he's done the same thing in Detroit. And
gotta love it.
Yeah, he's part of Detroit. Just announced today that they're bringing the WNBA back here. Tom Gores is going to be the principal owner. Dan Gilbert played a huge part in it.
It's going to do
I'm
well.
Sure you know who Tom Gores is, being the music industry.
Of course I do.
Venture capitalist, you know.
Yeah.
Tom Gores
Killing
is
it.
A smart man.
And it's good timing, too, because so much talent is in Michigan. I mean, student athletes, athletes as a whole, retired, and those that haven't even come to market yet. You know, at the Winner's Circle, we do a lot of NIL work. And we have Zoe Brooks, who's a point guard for North Carolina State women's basketball team, who's killing it, doing some great things. She has a camp in August in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, coming up the first weekend in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So women's sports are really emerging and taking off. What do you think, brother, about this whole men playing on the women's side, women playing on the men's side? I mean,
you know, in school, I don't think it has a place there, you know, because at that point you're developing. If there's an adult league that wants to do it and that's something that they want to get behind and you can find a way to make money and that's your thing, all power to you. But I think just as taking people's politics, personal feelings out of it, raw number for number, it's not right to put one with the other. Now, granted, there probably are some women out there that could stomp on a lot of men. Don't get me wrong.
No question.
But as a default rule, I just don't think that there's a place in it because like Caitlin Clark, she couldn't match up against LeBron. He would dominate her. He would make her look like she was a nobody.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
And he's one of her biggest supporters.
And I mean, we're not stopping people's liberties and choices and rights. But guess what? Go make a league that's an open league.
Right. If you can find a way to make money, all you. And if you can make it a product that's great watching, I'll watch it. The UFL, Michigan Panthers, season ticket holder here. I love the product. They've made it to the championship 2 years
Ballin',
in a row.
Brother.
You know, and it's, I believe their last game, they had 16,000 people attend. 16,000 for a spring football league with, you know, the Lions, their kicker came from the Michigan Panthers last year. And then the Panthers, he kicked 2 64-yard field goals in one game. That's not easy to do.
It's a lot to hope for because there's so much talent, there's rich talent in that league, and it's turned out to be more than ever expected.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've always been wanting to, because when it comes to sports, it's like football, basketball, hockey, and baseball kind of just depending. You know, baseball, I enjoy it more going.
Yeah.
Watching it, I can watch it, but I might doze off a time or two. Because especially when those announcers can be a little dry at times.
Long, long. And I mean, I like the experience of being at the park, and I like the cadence of, there he is, he checks the runner over at first, gets the sign. It's 71,000 here today in the park. It kicks and delivers, swing on for a ball, strike over at second. Don't forget, Sunday is going to be 2-for-1. You know, that whole thing.
Yeah,
I mean, that's part of the entertainment when you're listening on radio, TV. But being in the park, there's nothing like it. It's just, I usually can't go 9 innings anymore.
No, if it's a really good game, like it's either like one where they're just like piling on the runs, which doesn't happen often in baseball. So when it does, it's almost like a treat, you know? Or if it's like you're bordering a no-hitter type of situation, okay, then I'm dialed in 1,000% whether I'm there or not. But, you know, the one thing I will say in terms of game day, like when you're inside of the stadium, I think Major League Baseball probably has the best experience.
I would agree.
The NFL is good, but where the NFL beats everybody else is its product on the field.
And it's straight to business. It's complete work. The speed is fast and it's not as interactive. I think in baseball, it's so the cadence of it. I think people are talking, there's conversations, people look off, the smell of that grass, the weather, typically food choices, and some of the parks are designed so uniquely.
Yes.
Whether it's a home run, a strikeout, a stolen base, there's a lot of action there. Football's action too, but it's more strategy and power. So I think, you know, it's a fan experience. Some like boxing. Some people like the gladiator sports.
Boxing is, I don't want to sound like I'm being one of those people from back in the day types, but you know, I'm not knocking any boxers now because I know they get hit just as hard, but they don't have that showmanship that they used to, where the MMA fighters have the showmanship now. Like part of what sold boxing was Iron Mike. Yeah, he was great in the ring, but he just had that look, that showmanship to him. You know, those guys, they just, you know, Butterbean was just a guy where he's like roar out there. But when he hit a guy, I believe he almost killed a man in the ring one time. You know, he was,
and
the MMA is kind of now where that's at. You know, Dana White and, you know, Joe Rogan and those guys, they really took that from a nothing to
a scary.
You know, that I believe the UFC had went bankrupt, or was borderline bankrupt when they kind of really started getting involved with that Dana White.
There's no limit on that. That's going to be billions of dollars. I think they're going to be more with technology and the expansion of technology. We're going to see some amazing things on that side. And there are probably going to be some iterations of changing some rules, you know, more protections for the athletes and probably better propositions. I don't mean betting propositions. I mean better propositions for the enjoyment, family, the amount of violence, safety protocols. I think it's going to be an emerging sport.
No doubt. But I will say, in terms of just not knocking any of the gladiator sports, but hockey players, those are some tough guys. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, back in the day, Bob Probert, you know, and for the Red Wings, I mean, he was the enforcer, Bruiser. Man. You know, I mean, Steve Yzerman, it's so crazy when you see him, Steve Yzerman, he's the GM of the Red Wings now, and he's on TV, he's got all his teeth. And I'm like, man, I remember when you were winning Stanley Cups, missing one or two of those.
And, you know, you got to think these guys are skating fast. That puck is moving in the nanosecond. There's got to be continuity to the strategy, and you still have to be able to break away. It's an amazing sport. All sports are great. I think the teamwork, the camaraderie, the discipline, and the execution is what does it. From planning the play to executing is where the magic is.
Yeah. And, you know, who I think is a real good kind of like, you know, Bill Laimbeer is, right? And now I'm going to...
The center, the legend.
Yeah, from the Detroit Pistons.
He would lay it down a little bit. He was a bad boy.
And where I think of him at is you've got Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and then you go back to the Jordan and Bill
Bird and Beard. Bird. And what about Bird and Magic?
Yeah, Bird and Magic. It's just that competition there. Those two, you know, even though in terms of just stat numbers, Caitlin Clark completely outperforms. But Angel Reese's game is different. Her game isn't to put up all those points, you know.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of makes sure you're not bullying anybody on her team, you know, and she's definitely going to get that ball back, you know. But it's that dynamic between the two of those that's going to really put the NBA on the WNBA on the map, making money.
Yeah. It's just started. There's so many young kids. It's inspiring to the young ladies. And you know, even at the Winner's Circle, our sports agency, we're seeing that name, image, and likeness. You know, more recently, the higher courts have said that universities can directly pay student athletes, which is going to change the entire game now. We're seeing it
Yes.
from the portals to strategy, moving from schools to go to the pros. And women's sports, I think, are going to emerge in a competitive level that might even exceed the MMA on the same curve.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of geeked about it because, it's even though the sports technically the same sports, right? There's not all that precedent there. So now it's all new. It's exciting. It's something none of us have ever seen before in this fashion. And it is time to take it to the next level and make that money. And I mean, it is just, that's how I'm looking. I'm like, there's things going to be coming out here that is like when, your favorite team comes from the dust. There's just now, there's not that precedent there. It's like when the NFL took off, when, I mean, baseball's pretty much been popular for a long time. It's kind of like when the NBA merged with, I forgot the name of the other league in the 70s, early 80s, and it took off.
Yeah, it's cycling. It's cyclical, like, AFL and NFL merge. I mean, AFC, NFC, American football again, and the conferences merged. We're going to see some more emerging changes, such as I think the games in all facets is going to grow globally because of
Yes.
technology and because of the seamless integration to go from the entertainment off and on the field strategy, even betting. Betting is becoming so big. They're
Yes.
normalizing it, but it creates engagement, which is going to create money.
Yeah, I'm a when it comes to betting, I've got no problem doing a little tiny bit of betting, but I will not bet when it comes to the Lions because I am not afraid to say that that Homer factor hits in and then I will make a terrible choice on a parlay. And so I just said, you know what? That's the one thing I'm not touching because I don't want to ruin my experience for my team, for me, to where I'm sitting there going, if Jahmyr Gibbs didn't get that extra yard, he just cost me $1,000. I definitely separate it when it comes to that. There's a lot of people who don't. I got a lot of coworkers who don't. They're, hey man, did you hit this parlay? I said, you know what? I'm a sore loser when it comes to my money. So if I,
Play it small, smart, and safe.
a little bit is okay as long as you can be responsible, with it. And kind of just touching a little bit more on the sports, with the NIL. I mean, that is, man, that is a hot topic. Hot. Like, I mean, it is. And I get where some people say, hey, it can ruin the sport, but I think it's just more, it's finding where, like my show's called, the middle ground, right? Finding where does that
Nice
work
tag.
for,
Nice drop.
finding where does, it's always going to be chaotic in the beginning. That's the nature of life, but where's that middle ground? Because some of these universities were taking flat out advantage of these kids, making money hand over fist going, hey man, I can't, ooh, you get a cheeseburger, you might lose your scholarship.
Can't go home and visit a sick relative. Can't go home for Christmas. It's time now. I think that there's been such a gap in the non-equitable compensation exchange and rights that the time couldn't be better. I think they're going to have to work on, the academic athlete versus the athlete that's playing as an adult. And it's going to grow to be much better. It's a free place market. We're all entrepreneurs. We're all patriots. We all want to see people thrive who put the work in. And we should be seeing that shortly.
Yeah, and I will tell you, these kids, all of them have, well, maybe not all of them, because some of them I've seen pout over silly things, but 99.9% of them have earned every opportunity. Case in point to where if the NIL was around, would Tom Brady have fell the sixth round? Because he was not terrible in college at all. Not terrible in college. And if somebody knew how to market him at that time, he would have been a top-end draft pick.
There's no question. I mean, they didn't know who and where he was, but there were issues because the team, they're usually trading up with strategies a year to 3 years out. And then they're looking at salary caps because it's still a business. But, it divinely worked out well. He's one of the greatest that ever played the game. And that's how we have to look at it. These were the challenges that got him and what
And
made him
he's,
great.
yeah, I got the opportunity to shake his hand, and I heard him talk once, and he's such a genuine person. You know what I mean? Now, don't get me wrong, they said he was one of the biggest crap talkers on the field, though. He had no problem getting under your skin, but when you kind of separate that, he's also a big family man. He's just an all-around good person. I mean, now that him and I had him and Peyton,
Giselle.
oh yeah, him and Gisele together, but I had seen a, I don't know if it was on ESPN, one of those networks, Peyton Manning was talking about, and I think it was him and Tom were talking, I forget what season it was, but they met down, I believe, in Kentucky or Tennessee, and it was in the off season, and they were practicing, just practicing together, and it was in this tiny small town. And they paid whatever school was to keep it quiet. And somebody there, they said, hey, I'm going to get you if you ever tell anybody about this, because they were still both playing football and they were like, nobody's allowed to know that we know each other. It was like more of a one-time thing, but now they're becoming, good friends.
Respect.
And yeah. And Peyton Manning, one of the best to play it. You know, Tom Brady, you know, I don't know if you'll ever see another quarterback like that ever again. You know, and here's definitely another controversial when it comes to who made the Patriots, Tom Brady or Bill Belichick?
In my estimation, it was both of them equitably. Belichick was flat. He watched the rise of Brady and he trusted him and nurtured and fed him. There were times Brady's indelible and oftentimes skill off the ball. They relied on him. You know, sometimes it's just intuition, calling audibles, having a nose and a mind for the game. So I think it was both of them. It's just ego talk. Yeah, Neither one of them would have had the careers they've had without the other.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think Belichick would have been successful regardless. I just don't know if he would have won seven. He technically won six, I'm sorry, as a head coach. Brady was seven with the Bucs. You know, I mean, I really liked him when he went to the Bucs and got Bruce Arians that ring that had eluded him. If that was one man that needed one. You know, and then you got Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and him. Just, you know, man.
And what about the community? The community loves the team, supports the team. These are the things that are important, too, because in any business, there can be attrition. Things change, trends change, and sometimes you don't get the multiplier. But these seasoned franchises, these clubs, have merit and have muscle. That's why they've survived as long as
they have. Yeah, the Saints and Hurricane Katrina. I mean, the Saints really stepped up and helped to take care of that community. They opened up their stadium. They took care of it. They footed the bill. You know, they did ask for nothing in return. As far as I'm aware, you know, other things could have transpired. But, you know, as far as I'm aware that
nobody talks about that.
Yeah. You know, the Saints, Sean Payton, Drew Brees, you know, Sean Payton, he really loves that community. Even to this day, he still visits there all the time. From what I've seen, you know, he just great person when it comes to just loving that community, you know, and that brand recognition, that brand value brings that love to the community, right? And it makes it easy to do. Yeah. I mean, without those communities, without that, you don't got a business. If them people aren't showing up and buying and watching your product, you're as good as, I mean, case in point, Oakland Athletics.
Wow.
I mean,
from Charlie to MC Hammer, it's a total culture. The Bay Area, San Francisco, the music, food, the people, the historicals, and obviously playing. They love that team.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bummer when the Raiders left. You know, nobody's really attending too many Raiders games these days anyways. But
yeah, you know, it's like a club community. It's more like a country club or it's like a movement.
Yeah,
the product, as a sports team.
Right. Yeah, the product of the Raiders just hasn't been there since Al Davis passed. It just hasn't been a consistent product. Al Davis, I don't always want to say if he necessarily always knew how to win, but he knew how to put people in a position to win. You know, and that was where he was smart.
I agree. I think, you know, technology is now such a big part of the game that the game we've known has changed. I mean, from Jack Tatum and these hard-hitting guys from back in the day to the miraculous catches from, you know, Lynn Swan, who's at the Steelers, and all these changes over the decades are evidence that this sport and all sports are going to change. You might have one person that, you know, likes to stick to the old-fashioned way of playing with the rules, but the rules are going to change. I think as genetics change and as people change and opportunities change with and without the team.
Yeah, you know, one person that I think is a diamond in the rough that's going to be a future star executive down the road and taking the game changing is who's underrated here in Detroit that actually got an interview for a GM job, Chris Spielman. He has kind of been one of the men that have spearheaded the turnaround with the Lions. He was the first person that Sheila Ford hired when she took over the team. She actually went to his house, I believe it was down in Cincinnati, and he didn't even commit right then and there. But he knew he wanted to do it, and he was kind of key in bringing Brad Holmes and bringing all Dan Campbell, and, you know, he recognized that the game's different. But where a guy like that mattered is Chris Spielman was on the Lions in the 90s when they were good. So he understood the business, you know, but he also understood because he was a commentator. I don't know if you know who his brother is, Rick Spielman. He ran the Vikings for 10, however many years with Adrian Peterson, all those guys were there. Yeah, so he still had that modern touch with the game, you know, so he recognized that it changes. Whereas a lot of general managers, sometimes in this game, you see when they're putting teams together, you're going, are you playing the same game the rest of the NFL is? I mean, I'm not an NFL GM, so I don't know.
But
when I look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, I see the lines of the early 2000s. Just making boneheaded moves, you know, and not knocking them because, you know, I don't think that the cons don't want to win. You know, they do. You know, they're not dummies. You know, they know winning makes money. But some of the decisions they've made, I'm sitting there going, man, you know, when the Dolphins brought in Jalen Ramsey, great corner. But he hasn't been a great corner in a couple of years, you know.
Injuries. These guys are playing the game on the field, but playing the wrong game off the field. And I think sometimes it's economics that restricts these people. They'll go from being a player in the space to just preservation of capital, or they're setting it up to make an exit. And the fans all suffer from it, and so does the franchise. You got to be – I believe in the great George Steinbrenner, man. These guys that really didn't dial it in, they dialed it up. That's what it takes to really be a respect. Franchise. Same thing with the Boston Red Sox, what they were able to do to stay in business for so long and create the fans, Green Bay, all of these different.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay, they finally drafted, a receiver for the first time in the first round in like 23rd years?
Miracle.
I know Aaron Rodgers' blood had to have been boiling right about that point. He was going, can't you guys just draft me a first-round wide receiver at some point? Yeah, and they just never did. As much as being a Lions fan, I'm not a fan of Aaron Rodgers. The Packers, sometimes they would just miss those couple things, you know, that would just make it. But, you know, I was just kind of wondered in the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers, I would say, to me, best regular season quarterback ever. But he was never the same guy in the postseason for whatever reason.
Well, we know he was doing DMT and taking these journeys, opening up that gland.
I was definitely I would have never pegged Aaron Rodgers to be the guy that did things like that until he started saying it.
Too much freedom can sometimes put you in a prison.
Yes.
A prison, not a prism.
Yes, because it definitely throws a lot of things off. You know, as we kind of get towards the end here, so, you know, kind of getting back to, you know, one of the things that I talk about is like, what's a misconception about people who do grow up in poverty? You know, like I grew up in poverty too, right? You know, and I think that there's definitely a lot of misconceptions about poverty in this country. And, you know, a lot of times it is, I don't want to say self-inflicted, but you stay there because of a choice you make a lot of times.
Yeah. My thought is, I think, you know, we have to acknowledge history so we don't repeat it, but we don't live in history. We live in his and her story, which means your story or her story.
Right.
And that's what we did. You know, whether you look at, you know, I've never been one to earmark or to make designations or comparisons to 400 years of slavery, Jim Crow, and civil rights, besides identifying something that happened, learning from it. Okay, how do I make sure that this never happens again? How do I move forward to forge to where not just my ancestors, but all ancestors are pleased that, you know, we're following, you know, it's a clarion call to humanity. People talk about religion, race, creed, color, and I've always seen myself as a human before I was just a black man. I've always seen myself as a good man before a poor man, and a better man when I was poor, but not because I'm rich, but because I'm richer in spirit. So these are all elements of truth, and how well are you healed from these factions? And it's not just race. I mean, so many people are compromised. You know, you look at the things that are going on with the current administration, a lot of people are going to be compromised. A lot of people are going to unfairly be treated and sometimes meet misfortune, but how do you work through it?
That's the key.
My family, we believed in the tenets of education, wisdom, spirituality, working hard, and honesty, right? And we've not always practiced this at its highest level at all times because that's how we've learned to be better. But I went in and did the work, made the adjustments. You know, you think like a slave, work like a master. Master your own destiny. Be a slave to the work in God, and it'll bring you freedom.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, you know, mastering it, you know, being a leader in everything you do, you know, putting yourself, you know, just in order to lead your family, you got to be the best of yourself. You know, have you ever heard of I guess you'd call him rapper, Dax, D-A-X?
Yep.
You know, he's got a song, To Be a Man. I think probably one of his best songs. You know, I really like watching up and coming guys, you know, just
telling the truth. I'm not familiar with his artwork, but I've heard of him. And that truth, I mean, art has always been a place for storytelling, whether it's the beating the drums in the African tribes, whether it's in Greek storytellers and philosophers, or even in Rome, you know, oftentimes the comedians and musicians were talking about what was happening in community. And that was the voice of the people before traditional newspapers and broadcasts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if Rome had the technology we had today, I think we'd probably have a one world government.
Wow. Facts, brother. That's what it was.
They were savage enough they wanted everything and they weren't stopping until they got it. Problem is, they got too big and didn't figure out how to communicate from one end to the other.
Yeah, and that's with any unrighteous regime. It balances itself out, not just by causality, but I think it's the human and spiritual balance of the world. And, you know, when we're not balanced and we don't make changes from the past, we face tyranny over and over again.
Yeah.
Someone's losing.
You know, we still face a lot of challenges from Rome today that sometimes, going away from what you are as a country, as a person, it can truly affect you. And that's what kind of happened towards the Romans in the end. They went away from who they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really what hurt them. You know, I love history. History is like one of my big things. I love history. I've been pretty critical of the 17th Amendment of the United States, where the Senate was changed to being popularly elected rather than appointed. And people go, well, you know, there's a lot of corruption. I'm like, yeah, but now things are a little bit different. It's a lot easier spotted. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of issues in our country would be fixed, not to per se be political, but they would be fixed if the Senate was represented by the state governments, because the state governments have the same problem that you and I have as citizens.
Yeah, sovereign decrees, separation, but still it unifies itself. And
yes,
it's interesting to say that, but I think most people would freak out. The very concept and the philosophy makes a lot of sense, but
and
it would be
it
a
was.
Challenge.
Yeah. And it was that way. And then corruption kind of said, well, let's make it a popular elected thing. But, you know, I think we'd have a lot of problems solved today because the House represents the people. That's why there's so many representatives. So the House, if it represented the people and the people, you know, state governments were a lot more efficient.
Facts.
They would go, okay, hey, you know, the Senate, we've got these problems. Senate would go, yeah, we got these problems at the federal level that can manage the state. And I think there'd be a lot less showboating and a lot more getting things done, you know. And I think that's kind of where our government lost the middle ground.
I agree. And I mean, it's reflective of the common ideology and policy of people locally. Mm-hmm. Wow, we're rewriting government here, brother. Yeah, it could be. Each voice is going to be different. So if you have someone that's more in agriculture, someone that's industrial, someone that's technical, each voice is different. And then there's your popularity. If there becomes a quorum that's necessary or you need a vote, then we break it down and go on a federalist system. And this is extrapolating from the Federalist Papers. There's still been some things in even constitutional law and constitutional rights that have changed as people have changed. But it is an interesting concept.
Yeah, they are. You know, I tell people, you know, as we talked about leadership, one of the greatest examples I've seen of leadership of people wanting to know, like, I'm sure you've gathered, you know, I'm real big about knowing the person. That to me is everything. It's about the person and then what they've done. Everything I do is about the person and then what they've done. You know, I use this example a lot. Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, polar opposites politically, arch enemies. But
making government work.
But they cared about each other as men. They had dinner, I believe, almost every week.
Excuse me.
I don't know if it was at the White House or somewhere, but they cared about each other as men.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
respect. Right. And driving hard for their own factions, their own ideology. And there was public sentiment, which would kind of be indicating what the common minds of the populist state or nation was. And there was this little bit of transparency that Reagan took hits on, but that transparency can sometimes help us make the changes. We've seen it in the current administration where sometimes that transparency isn't there, whether it's right or wrong, or maybe it works or it doesn't, but we have to stick to something. And some of these challenges that you're talking about and ideas are something we have to look at and maybe forced to look at in days to come, if not months to come.
Yeah. An example of the current administration where I felt they really did a good job of reaching, trying to go, okay, how do we find a middle ground? They got a Kennedy to convert to the other side. They got Camelot to jump ship. You know, but the great part about it wasn't about party politics. It was about what's doing what they felt was best, whether you like them or not, was doing about what they felt was best for America. A lot of things.
Constituency. That's what it's about. Yeah. The constituents, the people, not what's written by the Constitution, but those that have to read it and write it by how they're living.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that a lot of our founding fathers felt that every generation should revisit the Constitution.
You have to today.
Yeah. We'd have a vastly different country if we did. It would be nice. But I don't hate my country at all. There's a lot of opportunities that we have that I feel some people don't get the opportunity to be in the positions that they should be in.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people don't understand it or they get, people get lost along the way. But listen, this is a perfect example. This is why you guys need to tune into this podcast, because people like us are sharing ideas and saying stuff that you guys won't. And listen, let's give this man some credit. Pretty interesting how we navigate through all these ideas and ideals. And I want to say to your audience, that candid, common conversation meets uncommon conversation is curing for the heart, curing for the mind, purges the soul for tolerance, patience, and understanding to live better in our times. Because we got to live in our times as we're living. We can't just talk about the future. We're teaching those who are going to be replacing us. We are fixing the evils, the failures of the past. And as we breathe and live today, is as we die.
Yeah, it's something that I always tell people, if you want to learn to move forward in life, train your replacement.
Nice, brother. Kind of drop the mic.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
It's nice, brother. It's
because, you know, at that point, you're looking over your shoulder going, is the student going to pass the teacher? But it's something that I learned in business, and it's how you become successful. Train your replacement.
It's real. It's real.
And that's something that my boss of, he's been my boss almost 20 years in some shape or form. You know, we've just kind of moved up the ranks together. He's always been one or two steps ahead of me. But man, he always told me, he said, hey, you know, he was a district. I was lower. And he goes, I want to move forward. How do I move forward? He looked at me and he said, I'm move forward. Train your replacement. He goes, even if you're the greatest thing ever since sliced bread, what am I going to do if I can't, if I move you and it turns the dust, it don't matter. So if you want to create opportunity for yourself and you're in a corporate structure, train the person below you to take over for you, and people are going to recognize that.
How you give it is how you'll get it. How you teach it is how it's taught. And how the teacher and the student have an understanding is what moves the nation, moves the community, moves the man or the woman.
Yeah, like I had said in the beginning, you got to see where someone can be, not where they are when you're developing people, helping leaders. And when you're doing that, training your replacement to put that person in a position to win. It's our job to put people in positions to win as leaders. And then, you know, where it goes from there is where it goes from there. And if you want to still be the leader in the end, you got to learn to be better.
I like it, brother. Well said.
So
this has been awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, and if you have, you know, I'm all about having regulars. You know, if you ever want to come back on, especially as we get closer to the sporting season, I'm sure that probably kicks things into gear for you.
Let's get through training camp and let's get to, I think, just after training camp, just before NBA season, we'll be right back. I'll do a remote live from either a locker room or somewhere on the field at a game.
Man, that'd be the greatest thing ever. And you know what? I appreciate it. And this has probably been one of the greatest experiences I've had in a long time, and got a lot of great insights, man. And I can't thank you enough.
It's an honor and a pleasure. And I'll tell you, welcome to the winner's circle. Next time when we get closer to the fall, I'm gonna have Brady Jackson and Rakeem Vick. People at this agency, we're going to be challenging because you got so many great ideas. We're going to have some fun with sports. Maybe we'll do a push-up bet or something really fun.
So, oh, yeah, man. I would love
it. Let's do it. Let's do it, brother.
Yeah, let's stay in touch. I'll shoot you my email, my phone number and everything,
please,
and shoot you everything over there. All right, you have a good day.
You too. When is it posting? Man.